Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, Ray Winston and Max Beasley talk about their new Netflix series, The Gentleman, from the world of Guy Ritchie. There's an amazing new movie called Origin and we talk to its Oscar-nominated director. Plus, we go live to Hollywood. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me, screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the News Talk app powered by Go Loud, and it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. Good weekend to you all. Sean Fardy, Isanum Dum. I do hope you're well. I got a new phone this week. You might wonder why I'm telling you about it, because for about 40 minutes I was without a phone while it was being changed over. And it just occurs to me, I know this sounds like a cliche, but I really experienced it. We are far too dependent on our phones. I was like texting my wife saying, I'm going to be offline for 40 minutes. I realized I couldn't use a lot of my banking devices. Not that I have that much money to device with, but you know what I mean? Like, we have really deeply become connected to these things. I'm not sure if they're a blessing or a curse anymore. Anyway, that was my week. But enough of that. A lot of people in touch last week about the show, particularly enjoying Stellan Skarsgård's interview and what a nice kind of seemingly unpretentious actor he was, and was very forthright about how much time he actually spent acting. Because when I asked him about how he managed to have a career and 8 children and help raise them, he said, well, I acted 4 months a year. So people enjoyed that. And people also particularly enjoyed Mairead Ronan and Jenny Kelly's chat about their favourite movies, and particularly E.T. It's never featured in the best movie slot, and people seem to enjoy the chat about that, and particularly talking about showing movies to your own children. There's something about that that we seem to assume they're going to love it, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, and it has to do with their own childhood. It's a fascinating kind of thing, and that's why I always ask people who have children, have they shown their favourite movie to their own children, if it's appropriate, of course. I have, to varying degrees with my own, but that's still a work in progress. I have enough trouble getting them to support Everton, so getting them to like my favourite movies could be too tall an order. But we'll see. And also, two people, I don't overstate it, but two people were in touch saying, Mark and Ashila, thank you for getting in touch, that they really enjoyed Dune Part 2 that they went to see in the cinema this week. Long though it is a great sci-fi movie and I think a worthy successor to Dune Part 1. And that's still very much in the multiplexes and cinemas around the country this weekend. So you could do a lot worse than going to Dune Part 2. But you know, it's going to take you a good 3 hours out of your life, more, by the time you get there, depending on where your local cinema is. But it's well worth a watch. And the big movie event of the week, possibly the year, is undoubtedly the Oscars. And all the Irish hope, most notably in the case of Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and of course Poor Things, which is very much an Irish production. Our very own Henry McKean has been sequestered to LA to report on the Oscars for News Talk. Why am I not there? Good question. Let's find out. Henry McKean, hello.
John, this is LA calling. LA calling. Yeah, we're here on the...
You're not on a payphone, are you?
No. We've got modern technology, and I know you were talking about phones there. On my Aer Lingus flight on the way over, flying the Irish film talent to Hollywood, I had my phone on the whole time. I was able to connect to the internet, so there was no escape from reality. So, and there is a lot of glamour here. It's a wonderful city. John, why aren't you here? Why aren't you over here? I don't know. I'm guessing it's something to do with the American visa people and your connections. I don't know.
My checkered past. Anyway, I'm not there, but you are, and I'm delighted you are. If it was anyone other than me, it should be you. So let's get to what you're doing there. So in terms of the Oscars, is your sense being there all roads are leading to Cillian Murphy?
Well, there's a lot of hype. I mean, just by pure coincidence, my flight, I bumped into actually Cillian Murphy in the Aer Lingus lounge. He was on my flight and I said hello and said congratulations and basically best of luck. And he said, thank you. And he said he was feeling grand and he was very humble and just wanted to get on with it. I don't think he likes all that attention. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you've seen every Oscar movie that's nominated. I've nearly seen them all, nearly there. And I watched Oppenheimer again on the plane, which was so unusual because the star was sitting four seats ahead of me and there I was watching his movie.
And did you go up to him and say, I loved you in Oppenheimer? No?
No, no. I mean, the thing is, I think the rule is on a plane, you're not supposed to approach a star because they're in their little pods. And he slept for a bit of it. But I did just say hi. And then recently, just over in London, got to get a question into him at the press conference about did he want to say hi to anyone? My question perhaps wasn't the strongest question, but he gave a great answer about will he sing a Rebel song. So, like, there's lots of Irish parties, for example, the LA consulate, the Irish Embassy having a party. There's just the other night, there was the Oscar Wilde's, and they don't have a red carpet. They have a green carpet.
Yes.
And lots of stars there from Pierce Brosnan, you name it, are there. And lots of Irish interest too. As you mentioned, Element Pictures, 11 nominations for Poor Things. And if your listeners haven't seen Poor Things, I think it's available to stream. I'm pretty sure it's up there now on one of the streamers. I think it's Disney. A fantastic, unusual, bonkers movie. And just you can see the Irish humor coming through. And Robbie Ryan, the cinematographer, is also nominated.
Yeah, so he's up for best cinematographer. That's kind of getting lost slightly in the Oppenheimer narrative.
And I also got to meet him at the airport and had a chat with him. And he was in great spirits, a proud Dubliner.
Yeah.
It all started for him out in learning in college in Deniri. Mm-hmm. And he's had so much success. And obviously, I will be hoping to have a chat with Ed Gainey and Andrew Lowe soon in the coming hours.
Indeed.
So that's
and
that's
tell me exciting. This, in terms of the parties, the famous one is Elton John's Oscar party, I presume, but one never can assume with Henry McKean, you're not going to that, are you?
Well, no, I have to say, I did email Elton John, and I think I'm still waiting for the response. I am trying to get to that party. I was here last year, and I went to the Vanity Fair party, which was something really quite special. Every name went past me, you name it.
Yeah.
Name it, every single name went right past.
And tell me finally, right? You know, that idea of being there, trying to get talking to these people, that melee on the carpets and stuff. I know you've been to a lot of these around the world, but it's pretty intense, right?
No, very intense. And as the years go by, it gets harder. And I know Cillian Murphy isn't a fan of the red carpet circuit and wants to move away from it and bring back what we had during COVID, which was Zoom. But he finds it quite intrusive, and it is. And thanks to Instagram and stuff like that, you're dealing with more and more journalists and also these influencers who sometimes get a better place on the red carpet than a traditional radio station or newspaper or TV. And then the host broadcaster gets everything first. So it's very tough. I remember the days when you'd go to a red carpet and the biggest stars from Will Ferrell to perhaps Mark Wahlberg would stop and they would do the interview. Now you've got to contact their publicist and they say, well, it depends on the mood. It depends. They might stop. They might not. It's a very unusual business. And there's huge expectation back at home in Ireland for Cillian Murphy. They want to hear what he has to say, access. Like, remember that show, Hollywood Access? I think it should be called Hollywood Access Denied. It's really quite
well, listen, tough. If any man can make it to the front of a red carpet line, it is you. You carry the hopes of a nation with you, Henry McKean, and you'll be hearing more from Henry throughout the course of the weekend and, most importantly, the morning after the Oscars when he will be live on News Talk. Henry, thank you and travel safe.
John, thank you.
Our man, Henry McKean. Live from LA there, my old mucker Henry. I can joke like that with Henry about things. We go back a long, long way to the early days of News Talk. And he's to the early days of News Talk. And, we didn't really get too much into Oscar predictions. But, like, I think at this stage it really is Cillian Murphy's. I can't see it going to anyone else. I really can't. I'm not expecting a huge amount of surprises. Now, I know I could be putting myself over the coals on this one, but I think Oppenheimer is going to storm home. It really fits the bill as an Oscar movie. You know, it's historical, it's grandiose, and it's also a great film. So let's see what happens. I'm looking forward to it. Sunday night. We'll talk about that next week. Now, on TV this week, I was watching this.
I didn't ask for any of this. The title has no practical value. The business is broken. There are holes in the roof. The staff are revolting, and you, brother, are a coke-sniffing...
Allow me to introduce myself. I used to be in business with your father. I have certain interests I need to discuss with you.
Now, what happens down there?
Must have come as a bit of a shock. Inheriting a house, title. As the new landlord, you will receive a significant amount of money. In return, letting us carry out our activities.
Yous lack a duke in it. What the...
Now, that was a clip from The Gentlemen. You might have heard about this. This is the new Guy Ritchie Netflix series, which launched this Thursday, 7th of March, on Netflix. Now, it's there was a Guy Ritchie, pretty good one, called The Gentlemen, which was a movie. This is not a continuation or sequel or that, but it's in the same world of these kind of wide boys and indeed wide ladies, the criminal underworld, with lots of rich people as well. We have Eddie Horniman, played by Theo James, who is from White Lotus, who unexpectedly inherits his father's sizable country estate, only to discover his father was knee-deep in all sorts of kind of shady business, including a cannabis empire had been under the farm and they'd been growing away. So we have a host of unsavory characters from Britain's criminal underworld wanting a piece of this operation. This all comes to light after his father died. However, Theo James, Eddie's character, wants to extricate his family from the clutches of these gangsters and kind of start to play them at their own game and starts to get a taste for it. Now, he rubs up against all sorts of criminals, as I say, mostly the Glass family, who are running this cannabis empire under his house. We have Kaya Scodelario, that great actress playing Susie Glass, and she's the boss of this Glass family, although her father, played by Ray Winston, is actually the boss, but he's in prison. And Kaya's character, Susie, is tough, but also very good at hanging out with posh people as well. She's steely, quite savvy. So it's a meaty eight-parter on Netflix, which I've really enjoyed. I watched it all, very Guy Ritchie-like. As I say, the boss is played, Susie Glass, is played by great actress Kaes Scodelario, who you know from Skins. She's been in Wuthering Heights, Pirates of the Caribbean, Welcome to Raccoon City, and Crawl, a good movie from about 5 years ago. Her father, the boss, is in prison when we meet him. He's played by the great Ray Winston. He has his own barbecue set in prison, and he's trying to run things with his daughter from prison. Does Ray Winston need an introduction? Sorry, I should have given him an introduction. Like Sexy Beast, all the way back to movies like Nil by Mouth and Scum, up to The Departed. He is English acting royalty and a cool dude. And I spoke to him and his daughter in The Gentlemen, Kaya Scodelario, who are both great in The Gentlemen. Kaya, if I can start with you, you know, we're not used to seeing tough women in kind of gangster things, but that's slowly changing now. And there's another Netflix show on at the moment that will remain nameless, which is doing something similar. So, I mean, as an actress, it must be great to get such a meaty, bad woman at times.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's always the most important part of any project is if the character's interesting. And you know, I could never play a two-dimensional character because I've never met a two-dimensional person. It's not real, you know. We are complicated and vulnerable and can be aggressive and can be sad and angry and beautiful and all those things in between. And every woman I've ever met has been all of those things. And
here, so here.
I like to reflect that in my work, making it feel real. And she's definitely top two badasses I've played though. So I'm pretty, I like her a lot.
And the first one being
Well, you, the action movie stuff is pretty cool.
Okay,
we've got to kick some butt a little bit more. Maybe next time.
And Ray, I love the way we see you at the start. You're a meat enthusiast at a barbecue. Yeah. It's just a great opener, you know? And it was like, Jesus, there's Ray Winston worrying about his meat, if you'll pardon the unfortunate pun. Did you get that and
I'm
think...
I'm always worried about my meat, John.
I knew you'd say it. But did you get it and think, oh, yeah, guy, you've done it again?
It's kind of weird because, you know, I'm used to doing, as you know, the straight kind of drama stuff and all that, you know. And when you read the script, and, you know, I had a good chat with Guy first, and you read the script, and you know Guy's stuff. You know how Guy kind of goes to work. You've watched him progress over the years and fine-tune his game, you know.
Yeah.
And so when you read your entrance scene is you're banged up, you're doing 10 years, yet you've got a barbecue and a Japanese chef. You go, hold on a minute, you know, this is going in the realms of stupidness and silliness. But having said that, you have second thoughts. Then you go, but this is Guy. This is the realms you go to. This is the kind of stuff. And if you want to buy into that, you're going to enjoy it. You know, once you do buy into it, you know, then I started to enjoy it and embrace it because I had fun, you know, and a giggle.
Kaya, you know, there's certain things, certain actors and actresses, they have certain things about them that get mentioned a lot. Like I was talking to Idris Elba and I just said his presence always gets me. And I was talking to another actor and it's their voice. And I noticed a thing about you and I saw it in another movie you did, Crawl. Your eyes are very... they contain a lot. Like they say a million things. I hope that's not a weird thing to say, over the course of your acting life, did people comment on your eyes?
I mean, it's interesting. I do think that that's really important. I think as an actor, it's important that you think, right? When there's space. And the very first character I ever played was a character called Effie. And for the first season of the show, she didn't speak at all. She was just watching everyone and she was listening. And I think it taught me as an actor as well to watch and to listen and to feel and react. And that's what I tend to do. My style, I try to do is quite instinctive, right? I don't necessarily plan what the scene's going to be like. I won't know until the moment I'm in it. Because I think you should also work off of the other actor and the environment and everything that's going on. But that's a huge compliment and very kind of you to say.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Ray, I'm a big admirer of your work and I've been watching it for a long time and I was far too young and I saw Scum when I shouldn't have. But the movie I just want to ask you about in closing is Nail by Mouth, because there's a scene in that movie where you play this horrible guy who's horrible at times, particularly to Kathy, and yet he has this moment of basically saying, you know, my dad wasn't around and it screwed me up. And he's not apologizing for everything as he's done, but as a viewer, you're like... you're torn. This guy's horrible, and yet your heart goes out to him. Do you remember that scene with any particular thing you could tell me about? I mean, maybe you don't. It's just me.
I think the thing about that scene, I remember the scene. I remember it well. In fact, we shot that scene three times.
Right.
First time we'd done it, we thought about it because it was very early on in the film when we started it. And me and Gary sat down and we said, we can do that better. We can film that better than that. And the performance can be better. And then we shot it again and we lost the sound recording on it. It's posted through the letterbox in Wardour Street in a night safe, and it got lost. And so we've done it again. But it just shows you, and we've done it again at the end of the movie, so the third time. And it was an amalgamation of when you know a scene's like that's coming, you can play all the other stuff first. And it's all right to be screaming and shouting and going deep into the abyss of a man drunk and actually trying to converse and tell someone how much he really loves them, but he can't verbally say it, you know? And then you get this moment of just, there's nothing else left, there's an abyss, you know? And you kind of pour your guts out, but it's not in a way where you're, you know, like one of those moments. It's just facts. You know, he was never f***ing there because he was drunk. You know, this is my old man, you know. The Nil by Mouth comes from, you know, when he was in hospital. this sign above his bed, nil by mouth. So we actually done the scene three times. And
the hairs in the back of my neck are standing up hearing you talk about it.
So cool.
It's lovely to see you both and continued success.
Thank you.
Oh boy.
The great Ray Winston there talking to me about a brilliant movie, a hard movie to watch, called Nil by Mouth. And you also heard his daughter there, well, not his real daughter, his daughter in Netflix's The Gentleman. Kaya Scodelario, who plays Susie Glass, she's really good in it. And as I say, she's an actress who has these piercing eyes that are kind of scary and follow you around the room. After the break, some more cast for The Gentleman, including the great and very funny Max Beasley. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talks TV and Movie Show. Now, before the break, I was chatting to some of the cast of The Gentleman, the new Guy Ritchie series on Netflix. You heard me talking to Ray Winston and Kaya Scodelario. Now, Max Beasley, a great TV actor who you have seen in so many TV shows over the years. You'll know him exactly when you see him, even though you won't see him because it's radio. He was in Jamestown, Homeland, Ordinary Lies, Mad Dogs. He has that strawberry orange hair. He was also a musician. In The Gentleman, he plays Henry Collins, a boxing promoter who comes into the series halfway through. He's an ex-army man and one of London's most successful boxing promoters who harbours somewhat of a darker past beneath the smooth-talking, self-assured facade. So you're going to hear me talk to Max Beasley and also a young and I would say inexperienced but new actor, Michael Vu, who plays Jimmy Chang. He's the grower. So he's Susie Glass's chief cannabis farmer in this underground cannabis farm, which we talked about earlier. So I got to talk to the great Max Beasley and Michael Vu about The Gentleman.
John from Dublin, how's it going? You all right?
That's not a bad accent, actually.
Family, we're born in the Rotunda.
Yeah, I saw that. I was as well. So look, we're off to a great start, you know. Max, if I can start with you, you know, boxing promoter, like to wash a bit of money and stuff like that. When Guy Ritchie calls, it strikes me he's one of those people you just say yes nearly without seeing the script. But you tell me.
Well, yeah, I was fortunate enough to work with him on Operation Fortune just briefly for two or three weeks out in Turkey. And I just loved it. And I did say to him, you know, down the line, I want to work with you more. Simple as that, basically. Some actors, you know, it's quite formulaic. They learn their bits and they go on set and they do their work. But I think it maybe it's because I'm a musician as well. I love his process. He's very sharp. He's on the button and he'll make little changes on the floor, on the day, in the moment. And you've just got to be able to swing with it. And I like that. I like being kept on my toes with that. And then so it's just an honour to do something else for him.
Yeah. And Michael, do you agree? Do you find the set a kind of unusual working environment the way Guy Ritchie works?
Oh, so for me, this is very new. I'm new to this world.
But he's very, very, very good.
How new are you, Michael? Because I was Googling you beforehand and there's a few things there, but not a huge amount. So how new is new?
This is like my second project. The first project was something I wrote and then sort of got nudged into acting in it. And then the casting director saw that film, saw me in that over like 12 years ago. And Dan Hubbard was looking for me since. And then funny enough, just a mutual friend, Kevin Bishop, got involved and passed on my number. And here we was. And then when I got on set and saw the big man Guy Ritchie, the way he works, it is amazing. Like he's proper smiles, laughter. When it's go time, it's go. But even when it's go time, he's still smiling. He's still got that good vibe with him. It's really cool to work with.
Yeah, and of course, your character is deep in the weed, literally. You're helping out with the... I presume that's okay, your biggest role so far. You're deep in drugs. Your parents aren't going to be offended or anything like that.
No, not at all. Funny enough, the whole weed growing thing is quite well known in the Vietnamese background. So
I know
a bit about it. So it was nice to jump in the role and sort of add that sort of element into it.
Yeah, okay. We won't go down the rabbit hole of legalization of marijuana or anything like that.
Leave that to the MPs, Captain.
Yeah, that's a different show. And Max, Did you have any boxing in, not, I know you're a boxing promoter in this, but you seem to, I don't know, I know it's acting and all, but you know your way around fighters, it seems. Had you ever treaded the boards in that regard, or have you an interest in boxing?
I boxed when I was a kid. Klaus Shea was my boxing coach in, out of West London. And then in LA, Tony Jeffries, who was a bronze medalist, he was my coach out there. But my uncle, I had my uncle Pat Brogan was a fighter from Stoke-on-Trent. And he fought Alan Minter a couple of times. And then Pat would bring over all of the heavyweight champions. So 14, 15, 16, up till 30 years of age. Marvelous Marvin became a family friend. I used to see Hagler out in Milan. He lived in Milan. Stevie Collins as well. What a fantastic fighter. And of course, the wonderful John Conte. But Larry Holmes, Jake LaMotta, I met them all. So I love all that. And I love the boxing world. I love everything about it. I love the art form of boxing, the balletic art form. It's called aggressive sport. And I have also over the years met some of the other side of the business, you know, the darker side. But maybe that's from coming from South Manchester. I don't know. But, you know, I tried to pull on all of that and be quite specific with a few little nuances of certain different people that I thought he'd be interesting as part of him. And you get an amount like a jigsaw piece of different people, pull them in. And then I think, I think that's the guy. Let's see. You do your normal homework, dialects, you know, movement, whatever it is. And you're prepped fully. So when you're on the floor, you can be pliable and you're ready whichever way you're going to be pulled. And certainly with a guy, he will expand you everywhere. He's a bit of a savant. He's very sharp. And
yeah,
I think he knows you can do it. It's not like he's trying to find a way with you. He expects you to know the business. So then when he gives you a no, you're going to do it. That's it. You know?
That's the money there. Even when I was listening, I was taking some notes here.
You're with it. Okay.
It's like free acting classes, you know? Yeah. Michael, I'm going to come back to you in a second, but I just want to ask Max one thing, because I didn't know about your uncle Pat, who clearly sounds Irish, but I was reading about your father, who was a musician and an actor, if the internet is to be believed. And so, you know, and it's funny, I've spoken to all sorts of famous children of artistic people and all, and it seems more than any other profession, like if you're a builder, you're not necessarily, if your dad was a builder, but it does seem with actors and musicians that sons and daughters often follow them in to the business. Like, did you look at your dad and go, man, that's a great job? Or did you go, man, you don't have any money? Like, it's funny how it all happened.
Well, I watched my dad. My dad was many things. He's a chameleon. My old man is a very talented musician. He's a talented voiceover artist, an impressionist. And he was on the Golden Shot, the Who Do You Do. He used to work at the Abercorn in Belfast. He used to spend a lot of time over in Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. I initially went into music. I was a musician from the age of three.
Yeah.
He put a pair of drumsticks in my hand. And I went to Cheetham School of Music and then did the Guildhall. And then I started off with Paul Weller when I was about 18. And that was the start of the music business, touring as a session musician. And it was Raging Bull that my dad said, just watch this film, kid. I think you'll like it. And I think I was playing drums with George Michael at the time. We were doing the MTV Awards in Berlin. And
As you do.
A little name drop, yeah.
Hold on. I've got another one coming in a minute. And I was recording with George Benson as well at the time. And my old man showed me that film, Raging Bull. And I went, I find there's vulnerability in Jake LaMotta. And he was an animal. I met him. He wasn't a nice man. But I got that down to De Niro's multifaceted, you know, his portrayal of it. And I went, that's clever, the craft of what De Niro's done with that role. So I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to get an acting coach from the Method, from the Actors Studio, and I'm going to go and work with her. And I found a woman that had worked with De Niro on a movie called The Bronx Tale, Sheila Gray. She became my acting coach, and I still work with her to this day on, you know, heavy-duty projects that are demanding. And that was it. And that was a start.
Wow.
And my mother was a jazz singer, so music is around me, you know, and you do follow. And I don't want my daughter, my eldest daughter wants to be an actor, but I'm like, nah, babe, please. No,
as we say in this part of the world, as the twig is bent, so shall the tree grow. So she might yet be a musician, you know. Michael, I'm sorry, we're out of time, but your co-star has a lot to say. But it's lovely to talk to you both.
Rabbiting on.
I loved it. I
thanks a lot, guys. Max Beasley there, talking about how he could not but become a musician and actor, and his own concerns for his daughter following him into the business. Max Beasley there. And also Michael Vu there, who plays Jimmy Chang, the chief cannabis grower in Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman, which is now on Netflix. It's a good watch. You will enjoy it. Fast-paced Guy Ritchie, kind of rich British people, gangsters, boxers, that stuff that Guy Ritchie does very well. I'm going to bring you more interviews from that because I had Jolie Richardson as well, but I didn't have enough time for that. But as I say, I'll bring you that next week. The Gentleman is on Netflix since the 7th of March, and very watchable it is too. Now, up next, something very different, a fantastic new movie called Origin, which lands in cinemas this weekend, that poses the question, what if racism in America is something completely different than what we thought it was? Stay tuned. Now, opening this weekend is a new film called Origin. It's based on the life of Isabel Wilkerson, played by June Ellis-Taylor, as she writes her book, Cast, The Origins of Our Discontent. Over the course of the film, Wilkerson travels throughout Germany, India, and the United States to research the caste system in each country's history. While Isabel is writing this book, she's also dealing with horrific personal loss of her own. As well as telling her story, the film shows us book burning and Nazi Germany and a young African-American not being allowed in a swimming pool along with other historical moments. It was written and directed by Academy Award nominee Ava DuVernay, whose previous movies include Selma, Middle of Nowhere, and the brilliant Netflix documentary The 13th. And I'm delighted to say she joins me now. Ava, hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. I was thinking, was the lightning rod in your own mind for doing this the idea of the book's contents, which are huge, really, all about caste and race, but the fact that this woman wrote this book while she was going through such of her own personal loss?
Yes, I mean, that was one of the things that fascinated me the most when I read the book, and I was so galvanized by the ideas in the book. It's really the spectacular anthropological thesis that spans so much of our history as human beings. But then when I learned that the writer was also battling just great triumph and tragedy in her own life while she was writing the book, both of these together really inspired me to write the screenplay.
Yeah. And, you know, it starts, or near the start, very chillingly with Trayvon Martin. And I remember the first time I actually heard about Trayvon Martin, oddly enough, was at a Bruce Springsteen concert in Ireland, where he directed a song called 41 Shots to Trayvon Martin about 3 days after it happened. It's funny, or not funny, but it's unusual how we hear about these things. But we hear the 911 call, and it's chilling and it's horrifying. Had you any, I don't know, reservations about using that? I'm not saying you should, but...
No. I made sure that I was in contact with and got permission from his mother, Sabrina Fulton. And she really conveyed to me that she wants her son's life to be known. Mm-hmm. She wants the circumstances around his death to be remembered. And so, no, I had no hesitation to share the tape.
When we get to the movie itself, I mentioned these historical moments. There's some really fascinating moments you choose that I guess are from the book as well. But you have the famous, or one of the famous, book burnings in a square in Berlin. And my understanding is you went to the original square and filmed it there. Like, was that hard to get permission to do all that? And I'm sure the last thing a lot of Germans want to see is people dressed as Nazis burning books. I'm not trying to be flippant.
Correct. No, it's true. It's true. Well, we shot the film in 37 days on three continents. It spans seven time periods in over 400 years. We did this without a studio. It was originally supposed to be with Netflix, and they wanted to make it on a different timeline than I wanted to make it. I wanted it to be out this year for the election year. And so we made it through my own small Black woman-owned production company. And we, as part of it, we wanted to go to the real places. When I shot Selma, I was on the real bridge where the Selma marches happened. And I knew that being in the real place imbued the image with just a different density, a different mm-hmm. set of, it's a little bit more magic. Mm-hmm. And so we traveled to Bibelplatz, a real square in Berlin, where one of the famous book burnings happened. We actually have pictures from that very book burning, which we recreated in painstaking detail. And no, it was not easy to ask German officials for the square to fly the swastika, to have people dressed in Nazi uniforms recreating it. But they were familiar with my previous work and they understood the importance of remembering and reckoning with the past.
Yeah, fascinating. You know, the central thesis, and I haven't read the book of Cast, is that, and you can tell me, but that racism in America, as we understand it, is just another instance of this caste system, and that if, that we experienced in Germany, in India. You could make the same case for, you know, 200 years ago in Ireland during the potato famine. I know she didn't get into that, but that struck me as well in terms of the Irish and the English. But as I say, you tell me if I've got this right, but she's suggesting that it isn't racism in America isn't actually to do with race and the color of your skin. It's to do with the hierarchy. And that's what we naturally gravitate towards. Have I got that right?
I think it's close. I think so. And everyone can interpret it on their own. I think there's a lot to what you're saying. For me, the way that I understand it is a caste is the foundation. It's the undergirding. It's the base. Mm. All of the isms sit on top of caste: racism, sexism, classism, homophobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism. They all sit on top of this idea of caste, which is I'm better than you because of a random set of traits. I have power and status because I diminish you. You are Irish. I am British. You are Black. I am white. You are a woman. I am a man. You are gay. I am cis. Yeah. These hierarchies that we construct dictate all of the isms. And so you can't solve a puzzle without knowing all of the pieces. And caste is one of the pieces that we must know if we want to solve for the prejudices that we all live within.
And in a way, it's similar to, you know, some psychologist or philosopher once said we spend our lives othering people. And it seems something quite similar to that, you know, making people an other. And it seems to somehow think we'll fare better in the world if we do that. But anyway, we talked about getting it made. And you've had huge success with Selma and an Academy Award nominee. But I presume, you know, I want to make this movie about an academic who's investigating race. I'm assuming there weren't people handing you buckets of money to get this made. And I kind of know that from the production notes. Like, it was a struggle.
Actually, we were originally with Netflix. They wanted to make it on a different timeline.
Right.
We then did not go to the studios and ask for money. We went to nonprofit organizations like the Ford Foundation, Loreen Powell Jobs, Melinda Gates. We went to foundations who are like-minded, who believe in justice and dignity for all. We said, instead of asking the studios for money, why don't we ask people whose money goes for the social good? And they all said yes. And that's how we made this movie.
I love The 13th, if it's not a strange thing to say about a documentary that's so serious. But was your motivation for that just that, like, I think there's a quote at the start, Barack Obama says America has 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisons.
Yes.
Were you just so, like, mystified by prison was meant to be this thing where you stop people doing crime and you punish them for a little while, and it's turned into this industrial multi-billion dollar complex? Like, it's baffling, and your documentary really shows that.
Well, thank you. And that's exactly what it was. That was the moment that I wanted to make that documentary, is when I heard that quote, that stat. I said, we have to explain this. We have to understand it. And so I'm going to make a movie about it. And it was similar with caste and origin. When I read that book, I thought, people need to know what's in this book. And many people won't read the book. So I'm going to make it into a film to try to explain it through character. And that's what we've done. There's some really powerful ideas in the book. And we try to put them in a film in a way that allows you to experience it with emotion and empathy. I hope people check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. They should. You're the type of person I could talk to all day, but I've just been told I have to let you go to the next thing. It was lovely to meet you, Ava, and continued success.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mom made me promise I'd come by today. It's my birthday.
Wait, today is your birthday?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
It's Brett.
I'm Isabel.
Yeah, I know.
Most relationships end. Friendships, romances, they break. You okay?
If you look closely, you'll find something tragic was happening.
Interested in writing something for us?
I don't do assignments anymore.
Yeah, well, you're a better writer than most people do anything. Have you heard the tapes?
No. Of what?
Stafford Police Department, this is Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. Looks like he's up to no good or something.
I want to be in the story. Really inside the story.
A clip there from Origin. And before that, you heard me talking to its director, Ava DuVernay. And she's the director of movies like Selma. Origin, it's a really interesting film, as I hope you got a sense from there, all about this academic who's getting over the death of her husband and indeed her mother. And she decides to write this book all about the caste system. And the way the movie works is that it's her journey, but it's also recreations of famous incidents of racism throughout kind of the 20th century. It's a very ambitious, well put together film. And, you know, this is a movie show, but the book that it's based on, Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents, I think I'm going to read that because it's a fascinating thesis, not one everyone agrees with, but it's the idea that in a way racism has nothing to do with the color of someone's skin, but it has to do with just wanting to subjugate people, and you will use any method you can find. Traditionally, that's how it's worked. That's the theory of the book, but I would love to know more. I haven't read it, but as I say, I plan to, if time allows, but I do have to watch a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows for you guys. In service to you, my loyal listeners. Oh, and I should mention, Origin is in cinemas from this Friday, the 8th of March. That is it for this week. Next week on the show, I'm going to be talking to Jolie Richardson. We'll have Oscar fallout, all sorts of stuff. Ed Smith is talking about his favourite movie, which I'm very excited about. In the meantime, I'll just remind you, this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a safe week ahead, and I'll talk to you next week.